we started?
I'm
going to set, as it's a sort of end of year Christmas special,
yeah,
I'm going to set the timer for 40 minutes. There's 10 minutes of bonus waffle.
Bonus material.
I'd like to start this week's podcast by apologising to all 12 listeners that we have that I didn't make last week. I had the flu.
How dare you? You should apologise.
The fucking flu, and it was awful.
Yeah.
And there might be, I can only apologise.
Some residual coughing.
Yeah. But I'm here. And Dad, how have you been? You've been running the manning the fort,
yeah,
in my absence.
It's been pretty chill, man. Yeah, like obviously December is not traditionally the busiest time at a recording studio, but there's been stuff happening. I did a mix last week. I mixed the music.
How did it go, Dan?
It went really
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What did you learn? Because you always learn something when you do a mix, don't you?
What did I learn?
What did you learn?
I don't know. I can't think of a specific lesson because it was a relatively simple track. But what I will say is that...
I'm gonna dig in on that.
Well,
why is it simple? What's simple?
So what's simple?
Low track count.
Low. It's not so much about low track count. The track count is kind of you can have a big stack of BVs. Like this track had a big 20 channels of backing vocals, but they all just kind of went. So that's 20 tracks, but it's about 8 seconds of the song, and within that stack was about 3-4 elements.
Okay.
So, and obviously, well, when I say 3 or 4 elements, I mean, so like the same vocal stacked.
Yeah.
Quadruple tracked, I think. It was a little bit of a mix.
Yeah.
And obviously, you still got to check that it works. Because sometimes you get gremlins that wasn't. I mean, by the way, my compliments to the chef who sent me the multi tracks.
Let's give him a shout out. You mean the producer?
The producer sent some very, very beautiful multi tracks. So much labeling. Where was it? I remember in the session I was calling him Joshua.
Yeah.
He's not called Joshua.
Oh, brilliant. Well done, Dan.
Jez.
He thinks you're a prick.
I think it's Jez Hurst.
Ah.
Well, we'll shout him out in the notes.
Well done, Jez Hurst.
What was really nice is he sent dry stems, dry, like zero effects on everything.
Lovely.
He sent wet, which means effect with effects. And he also sent the reverb buses completely separate.
Oh, that's good.
So that's kind of quite nice.
Fucking great.
Yeah. So I've got to say, yeah, it really makes my job a lot easier.
Yeah.
Particularly as the wet stems, the affected ones. Actually, I sort of thought you've always got to kind of size up what your approach is. I thought, first of all, I had to listen to the vocal just to see what is going on there. And I thought, often there's some kind of temp compression on there, which has been, you know, you don't expect the settings to be completely dialed in during the production session. You know, it's just there to give an effect.
Yeah.
So I listened to the affected version. And I thought, no, that I'd rather work from the clean, which is what I expect.
Yeah.
But it's always good to check because sometimes it sounds great. I think everything else was the wet version. I mean, there wasn't that much effect anyway. But
sure. So what did you learn, Dan? What was the learning?
Well, here's the lesson.
Yes.
We sort of know this, but it was reiterated. Depending on the genre, that affects what your starting place is. So this was a kind of, should we say, a pop ballad, if you like.
Yeah.
So pop music means vocal is front and center the entire time. It didn't have really any percussion or drums as such, so it's quite a sort of a smooth landscape.
You missed a trick there, Joshua.
Exactly.
Put drums in.
Joshua, we're talking about pop ballad. So yeah, the main elements were a electric guitar.
Yeah.
Essentially one piano, little bits of overlapping tracks.
Yeah.
But, and some strings, all programmed stuff, but sounding great. And then some backing vocals. But anyway, my approach on this, which is very different to a rock song, is mix the vocal first. And I've worked with the artist before.
Yes.
And I know that she likes a nice kind of bright, crisp vocal.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, you're not trying to balance against... Once you got beats on the go, it's kind of a different matter, I think.
But, yeah.
I was just like, all of the music just has to fold around this vocal.
Yeah,
and it's
just got to
be front and center. So I mean, I have worked with her quite a lot. So yeah. I know I'm very familiar with what she wants. In fact, I actually referenced some other...
Your own work.
I referenced my own mixes because I was like, well, she liked how that sounded. So why not?
You know,
I'm not a huge user of reference tracks. It's not... It's almost always good to reference something at some point. Some people spend a lot of time referencing reference tracks, you know. But yeah, so I just kind of got the vocal sound that I wanted. Obviously tweaked it later on as the other elements came in. But if you're working, you know, if you're doing a band mix, for example, like a four-piece rock band or an indie track or something, you do tend to start with the drums, you know, because they sort of need a bit of a... You sort of need to know what you're dealing with first and foremost, you know? And obviously, I couldn't start with the drums on this because it was missing.
There was no fucking drums. But
I could have started, if it was something folky, I might have started with a guitar or piano or something, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
I'd like to share that I had an album back from mastering last night. And
yeah.
I'd like to use this platform to say how good the master sounds.
Great.
There's a studio up in like the Outer Hebrides called Black Bay Studios. Have you heard about it?
Yeah.
It's like I think it's like up by like Ullapool, like way out.
Yeah.
On the Outer Hebrides.
Yeah. And you went there?
No, it's not the one I went to.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's that record though. So I tracked a record in a place called Watercolor Studios, which is by Ben Nevis. So it's kind of the start of the Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
This place, Black Bay Studio, is like, dude, it's like a 4 hours and a couple of ferries further north.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It really is. Like
it makes Watercolor on the Studios look like...
Like a, in the
Clapton.
Yeah, the sort of seeming metropolis. I've not been there. It looks amazing. But anyway, they've mastered, a guy called Pete there has mastered the record. God, it sounds good.
Yeah.
I've only had a little listen to 3 or 4 of the tracks this morning.
Mm.
Do you know when you're just like, it comes back from mastering and you're just like, I don't know what they've done here, but
yeah.
It's just everything sounds better.
A little bit of sauce.
Just like, it's like they, I always think of it as like, and shout out to Matt Colwyn, he always seems to do this. It's like, they've expanded everything by like, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is wider, bright. It just they've grown it somehow.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Ears. I always think that, and I mean, I think the role of the master, well, not the role of the mastering engineer, but the role of mastering as a process, I think it is a little bit different to kind of maybe what it was 10 years ago or something.
Why so, Dan?
Because I think there's so many more people around who are offering a mix master service.
Yeah.
Now, I think to me, that's a little bit of a... I don't know if you can offer a mix master process. You can offer a process.
Why can't you offer a mix master? Dave Fridman, he masters,
well,
right?
Yeah, no, to me, the big advantage of having a professional mastering engineer do it is, you know, most of them, some of them are producers, but I think the key the key thing you get, the key benefit, is that they are not kind of that they are separate from your process.
Yes.
And what I mean is they weren't there when the vocals were tracked and the singer was feeling self-conscious about how they sang second verse. If you played on it as the producer, you know, you haven't got your, they're not interested in your kind of like your hang-ups about which bit you thought was like, oh, I did a really great drum fill there. I worked really hard to get that fill right. So when you're mixing it, you're going to have some sort of bias to kind of towards. I think it's valuable that the mastering engineer is detached from that. I think the mix engineer is a little bit different because a mix can change so much more about the production. And you've also got, as a mix engineer, you've got the capacity to remove sections as well. If you feel it's appropriate or you're just feeling brave, or, you know.
I mean, I feel that what the mastering can do as well, which maybe I'm not so good at, is bring like, the particularly the subs and the super high end up to the kind of commercial standard.
Yeah.
They can push. I get a bit scared about low end and high end.
Right.
Am I just like pushing this too much?
I think.
Whereas like that also, I don't know how the really, and maybe it's something to do with gear, but like that like 20K shine, that the master, particularly really good mastering engineers like Matt get.
Yeah.
They've got those amazing, like, he's going through that wonderful analog signal flip, and then that beautiful just shine that they get on it.
Yeah.
I think that is a gear thing.
I think, well,
because I can't do that on, you know, Pro Tools. Well, you Pro Tools EQ3. Just boost.
you can add it, but you're never as kind of aware of the effect that it's having as somebody sitting in a purpose-built mastering suite with £100,000 pair of monitors, which are revealing every detail.
And I think that they can just dial in that lovely shine and that really beautiful sort of, you know, 40 hertz. They can push that right up to the point that it's like not boomy or harsh. Mm. They ride right up to that line.
Yeah.
And it just gives it, oh, like, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, look, so, right, is this our Christmas special end of year roundup? We're not doing another one of these. This is the fucking last one. I thought we did quite well to keep this going though, Dan, because we actually did.
I think apart from you being struck down.
Yes.
With the Lurgy.
Yeah.
I think, the momentum was there. We've had a few emails.
You know? We have. Do you want to talk about what we asked in the email?
Let's talk about the
email.
The email.
There were two.
We're going to come back to Amy's at some point.
Yeah, Amy.
But
we hear you, Amy.
Mark Woods, shout out Mark Woods,
friend of the show,
who we did work with a long time ago. I don't know if you remember.
I don't. Sorry, Mark.
We did. It was at the old studio in about 2016, 2017 or something.
Okay.
We definitely did drums.
Okay.
I think that was the key part of it.
Okay.
But Mark Sparky Bosk.
Oh yeah.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, I remember Mark. All right.
His music's on the internet. Go and check it out. It's Sparky, Bosque.
What's he asking, Dan?
What's he asking? He says, hello, fellas. I hope you're both very well. I'm very much enjoying the latest series.
Yeah.
This might warrant an episode in its own right, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on virtual instruments / VSTs. I'm gonna leave it there, actually.
Is that like versus analog, the analog equivalent?
Yeah, he sort of says, do you have any favourites that you tend to use a lot? And would you always prefer to record the real thing if possible?
Shall I answer that or do you want to go first?
Just give some thoughts. Let's hear your thoughts on it first.
The VST plugin versus the analog, they're like just two completely different things.
I agree.
I don't think one is better or worse. It's a bit like drums and drum machines, you know? I don't see them being in competition with each other in any regard.
Mm-hmm.
you know, just the kind of tactile nature of the analog, of analog, gives you something.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the analog, so the analog machines that I use are my Moog Sub 37, the Juno, but mostly those two.
It's a Juno 6, by the way.
Juno 6, yeah, which give you a sense of randomness that I don't think you get as well with soft synths.
Yeah.
But I use those as soft synths as well.
I haven't had the Arturia V collection for that long, but that's normally, well, if you want something synthy, that's the one to bust out. I think it's circumstantial as well. Like if you've got a track that's well underway and you go like, you know, it'd be really good in this section to have like a synth pad.
Yeah.
I think that's going to tend to be where I'm going to pull out the soft synth, because
right.
If you need to explore what's going on and sort of like hear some sounds and some textures against the backdrop of what's already there, I think that is where soft synths are amazing, because it's quick. You can just pull it up and you're off in a few seconds, you know.
Yes.
Notwithstanding Pro Tools MIDI routing.
Do you know what annoys me about soft synths a lot?
Yeah.
I wish that they didn't have any effects on, like delays, reverbs.
Yeah. Within the presets, yeah, you mean?
Even within the presets, even chorus, actually, mm-hmm. unless it's a Juno, unless it was built into, like, you know, the original thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, for Arturia, so many of them are like, you sort of get a preset, and then you've got to go scroll through a lot of shit to get, there's like a shitty ping pong delay that
you have to go and bypass all the stuff.
I don't want.
Yeah.
I think it would be much more serious if there was, I don't know, a mode that you could go into that it's just the presets of the original units and not shitty reverbs that I just don't want.
Yeah. I mean, just to explain as well, within the Arturia universe.
I do like Arturia though.
Yeah.
And I use their shit.
It's essentially emulations, is probably the right word. Emulations of real analog synths. Like, I don't think, there's a couple of things in there that are sort of originals, aren't they? But you get it.
Yeah.
Because you want the sound of a Juno or Prophet or
Mellotron, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a kind of an effects rack underneath. Which, yeah, I mean, that would be great, because all those effects are separate. Maybe there is an option, if anyone knows, if there's just an option.
Maybe there is, yeah. I wish there was.
It would seem easy, wouldn't it? Just off, get dumped.
Go.
I want to hear all this stuff, but without the ping pong delay. And the phaser.
Yeah.
I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've used a phaser in a production.
Yeah. Do you know what I was thinking? Sorry, can we go on a phaser tangent?
Yeah.
I often hear phaser on records and I think, God, that's cool.
Yeah.
I've got to use that.
Mm.
Like, I'm thinking of a lot of 70s records, like Kashmir, Led Zeppelin. There's like phaser on the, it sounds like the drum overheads.
Yeah.
And it's just cool as shit.
Mm.
It's like, oh, yes. And then whenever I put it on anything I'm working with,
yeah,
I get scared. And it's like, that sounds shit.
Well, I think it does sound shit on the whole.
Yes.
Every effect has its place, but I think it sounds right within the context of a sort of a 70s record.
Yeah.
Never write anything off. But
yeah,
I don't think I've got it to work on anything other than something which is extremely pushed in the background.
Yeah.
Or has quite a 70s sort of flavor to it, you know.
The thing I have got working this year on this on this pop mix I just did is a sort of flanging effect.
Okay.
So what's the difference between phaser? Well, I'd say the phaser sort of goes,
yeah.
The envelope of the effect changes, whereas the flange is more like a deep chorus. So it's a sort of stereo.
Yeah, you hear the you still hear the movement in it like a phaser, don't you? But it's not. It's a bit more blended with.
Exactly, but yeah. The movement isn't so isn't so pronounced. It's either really slow, or it and it just essentially takes the signal and sort of spreads it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and sort of moves it around very slowly.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed that.
And a slow modulation of some sort is.
And I've enjoyed that a lot on backing vocals this year, dear.
On backing vocals, yeah. There we go.
But going back to the analog versus digital, I definitely we're at a stage now where I listen to any record. I can be fucking any record.
Mm.
And if you said, so are these analog synths or are they soft synths? I couldn't say. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, I think it's within the skills of the producer to make the sound work.
Exactly, Dan.
So if it's
exactly,
if the sound selection isn't right for the track, then I think you can tell whether it's a soft synth or not.
Interesting, really.
You know, because sound selection is so crucial to by sound selection I mean your choice of how you make the elements of the track sound. So if you're doing kind of like you're doing a kind of a White Stripes kind of stripped back record, which has got a lot of tone and character to it, and it's quite rocky. If you lob, just sort of carelessly throw on like
Arturia Ping Pong 5.
Exactly. Well, no, but if you throw on even like a decent organ sound,
yes.
If you haven't, you still got to work it in. You got to massage. Yeah. Got to massage the dough. You know.
But I'd say you need to massage the dough no matter what the source.
Yeah. But I mean,
that dough needs massaging.
But I think the difference is if I'm recording a real instrument. So we've got an organ upstairs in Studio C. Yeah. Which, like many things we've got here at the studio, was given to us.
Yes.
I think it was sort of rescued from a skip.
From Will South. Thank you, Will South.
Thank you, Will South, friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast.
it was a donation. I think it was being chucked out of a school. I haven't quite got, and it's quite an obtuse sound to it. And it's a sort of
juice,
you know. It's not Hammond organ at all. It's got this kind of organ sound, if you can imagine a baseball game.
Yes,
it's got this sort of circusy, quirky sound to it. I find the massaging in there tends to come from the fact that I mic it up because it's got speakers in it.
Yes,
and it's got Trem in there.
Yes,
so. The tends to do it with an SM7, by the way, which is what we're recording into today.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. Exactly. I find the gap between the speaker and the mic, you know, offers a bit of a blend and a bit of a softening. And often that's part of the massaging. I mean, it's you never say no to a bit of chorus on that that organ, you know, because. Or organs and chorus go hand in hand, like
yeah.
Cheese and crackers at Christmas.
So going back to the analog and digital thing, though, I do find as well that the analog, like my Moog, the low end on that is, it does give you something.
It's got a chonk to it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a sort of weight that it just isn't quite as there.
Mm-hmm.
On,
and it's still a little bit imperfect. So I mean, let's not write it off in future. But if I open my Arturia Prophet 5 and you open yours on your system, and we have the same settings,
yeah, it's the same.
We will have the same sound.
Yeah.
Whereas notwithstanding any randomness which is built into it, but the randomness will appear at the same point.
Yes.
And different real instruments, like our Wurlitzer, that doesn't quite... It sounds significantly different. to anyone else as well.
It really does. Anyone,
I mean, not it's been a little while since someone's brought one in, but I always notice that ours sounds different to what the ones that people bring in. And I'm sure if you bring in, you know, one person's, I think they all kind of evolve.
They also, well, because I guess the tuning's always moving in them because they've got all those moving parts.
Yeah, exactly. They're all wooden hammer action, and they've been dropped. Some of them have been dropped. Some of them haven't.
Ours has been dropped.
Yes, exactly.
I think our word is like magic, Dan.
Yeah,
it actually is magic.
Yeah, I think
it does things to tracks. Yeah. It's just like, wow.
Yeah. And you get a little bit of noise off, or you get a lot of noise.
Get
off,
a lot of noise.
The trem speed in particular. So on the 200 and the 200A, the trem speed is, you get it how it, you take it or leave it. You can't adjust the speed. You can only adjust the blend. I think ours has got a really nice,
it's a good speed. Is it
good,
yes,
speed?
Yes.
Just the right amount of speed.
Because I remember using Hamish, a friend of the podcast, Hamish Jackson.
Yeah.
He's got a Whirly. And the trem speed is very different.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. Sorry, yeah. Hamish.
Sorry,
anyway,
Hamish.
Speaking of Hamish, the fucking TG didn't sell.
The TG, EMI TG 12345.
Yeah, this is just to say, for anyone that's not aware, that the 8-channel desk that was in Abbey Road in the late 60s that was used to record the Abbey Road, the album, the Beatles album, went on sale and didn't sell.
Well, it didn't meet its reserve.
What was the reserve?
Well, the reserve is the reserve. The reserve is secret.
The reserve is secret.
But the highest bid was 1.9 million.
And it didn't meet the reserve!
And it didn't meet the reserve!
God.
For context, recording costs.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Can you remember what the last one sold for?
Well, the last one sold for 1.6.
Right. This one's got sort of more, I think it's got more certificates and is potentially more original. I think.
And I do know, maybe the reserve is high because I know that, I don't know how much, but I know that they spent a lot of money on it because only 70% of it, they had to source.
Yeah.
About a third of it.
Mm.
And it was expensive.
Yeah.
And took fucking 5
years.
Those
parts are expensive.
Fuck. I hope that it, I was going to say, I hope it ends up in our control room.
Yeah.
And we were not buying it, but I do hope it makes music still.
Yeah,
because it's such a great thing.
Yeah,
and it would be great if it just didn't end up in some sort of hedge funders
in a bank
cigar room.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of because I think many a Stradivarius has fallen to that fate of just becoming a sort of a gold bar.
Yeah,
and then they don't like not being used musical instruments.
They don't, do they?
Without being too sort of superstitious, but like they're supposed to be played. The wood is supposed to vibrate.
To be played, but I guess, you know, if you have these really famous instruments, and you know Brian May's guitar, Nile Rodgers' guitar, it's like they're just so famous.
Yeah,
and
iconic might be.
They're iconic, and you think that okay, well, you know, when Brian May goes, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to that guitar?
Mm. Is it still the same one he made himself?
Yeah,
right.
It is. And I mean, I know we may have talked about this on previous podcasts, but I don't think there's anything about Brian May's guitar that's special. What's special about Brian May's guitar is his relationship to it.
Yeah.
And once he goes, it's just a fucking bit of wood that no one... that the bond is broken.
Yeah, I mean, because he built it, it's customized to him, isn't it?
So, I don't think it's even because he built it. I think it's because he spent 50 years playing it. He just knows every... Because if you'd have given him in 1970, whenever he started playing the guitar, you just gave him a telly.
Well, it's probably...
He would have been brilliant with that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not necessary that, like... Yeah, it's him. I fucking love Brian May.
Brian, if you're listening,
I'm gonna out you on this podcast and say, you know, you don't like Brian's tone.
I love Brian's
tone.
Do
you?
Yeah, yeah.
You've been very critical of Brian's tone.
No, I've never been critical of it.
Oh, come on.
No. It's just it's not a tone that I would ever use myself.
It's not a tone anyone else can get. Brian's tone is just like Brian's tone.
Well, you take that tone control and you roll it right to the bottom. It's hard to make that work.
Right.
As well. I think particularly in modern recordings.
Right.
When everything's fairly bright.
Yeah.
That the rolled off, you know, if you, I always think that Brighton Rock, I think this is the third time I've mentioned the Sheer Heart Attack album.
I love Sheer Heart Attack.
But yeah, the tone on Brighton Rock is, that's the most rolled off of all.
So I've watched, if anyone wants to talk out for an hour, there's a Rig Rundown, a Brian May Rig Rundown. And his tech goes through Brian's rig.
Okay.
And it's the guitar.
Yeah.
It's got a treble boost.
Yeah.
And the AC30, everything is dialed all the way east. So everything is just on full.
Okay.
So it must be bright because they're bright, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe the lack of sort of...
Well, it's got to be the pickup then, isn't it?
Presence also has something to do with the fact he plays very softly. When you see him play, he just plays really softly.
Yeah. It's got to be the pickups then. Who knows, Brian, if you're listening.
It's in the fingers, mate.
It's all in the fingers. Oh, it's all in the playing.
He doesn't have very toppy fingers.
So the opposite of Tony Iommi.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath guitarist who has metal fingertips.
One metal fingertip.
Is there only one?
Yeah. Didn't he, he lost the top of his finger in a machine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And dust, which is about the most fucking metal thing you can do.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Anyway.
Should we do a roundup of the year?
How are we doing at the time? We've got 8 minutes left. Let's round up the year.
Round up the year.
In 8 minutes. Go on, you start, Dan.
Right. How do we round up the year?
What does that even mean? You mean just talk about our highlights of the year?
What's been the highlights of the year?
I can tell you about my highlights of the year.
Tell me about your highlights of the year.
Top of my head. Do you know what? I just like to say this. I've got a lot of music coming out next year.
Yes.
That I've been involved with that I'm so proud of. I've had such a great year creatively. I've just worked with some absolutely amazing people. I've made some really good music that I'm really proud of.
Brilliant.
And I can't wait for next year. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I think my highlight of the year actually has been, we've had 3 writing camps.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, I think the great thing about writing camps is, maybe it's only been 2. We'll talk 2 main ones and a couple of smaller ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is 3, but one of them I wasn't really sort of party to what was going on. But there's a lot of joy in those situations, you know? So like, just to kind of explain to people what a writing camp is, it's where a number of artists gather almost kind of under a flag in the studio.
Yeah.
So the ECA writing camp, which had, I can't remember what the track's called, but it came out a few weeks ago. I will put it in the description. That was like, they took an unusual approach to a writing camp, which is they took a kind of a Sunday.
Was it 4 Sundays, wasn't it?
Well, it was 5. But yeah. So 5 Sundays through May. And they had a kind of a different, a different genre for each weekend. And I think it's important. I'm not really a writer, as I mentioned before, but I think it's, when there's a clear idea of what you're doing, when there's a brief, it makes such a huge difference to almost anything.
Yeah.
But I was looking through, I was kind of looking through a lot of photos through this year. Those photos, obviously, we've got loads of photos on Instagram of people having a great time in the studio, but those ones stick out particularly.
Really?
Of just sort of people having, like, people who have largely never met.
Yes.
You know, just having a blast.
That was good.
You know?
I thought, is it the Sony one? Not Sony, Warner. We had a Warner one.
Universal Publishing.
Yeah, Universal Publishing. I got there in the end.
Yes, it's one of the big
three. That one was, was great.
That was great.
In the week that they were in, there was just a great vibe.
Yeah, that was.
And people seemed to really love it. It was great.
That was across both studios as well. I mean, that's quite fun as well when something's happening across Studio A and C.
Do you know what one of my highlights of the year was, Dan? Mm. Our Christmas party.
Our Christmas party.
Was really good.
We haven't spoken about that because...
I've been sick since then.
You were waylaid.
Yeah. Maybe that's what tipped me over the edge.
Yeah.
Christmas party. It was really good, man.
It was great.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who came to the Christmas party.
And to spread... I hope I don't sound cheesy, but during that Christmas party, I thought, fuck, I really love everyone that uses our studio.
Yeah.
It was such a nice...
Legends only, wasn't it?
It was genuinely just everyone there was just, I was happy to see everyone.
Yeah.
Well, almost everyone. No, I'm joking. No, it was just great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, as we always managed to do, the right amount of alcohol to the right number of people.
Yeah.
A few more people on the soft drinks this year.
Yeah.
That's good, you know.
So this is it. The big question on everyone's lips, well, on mine actually, are we going to do this next year?
Podcast?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Let's pick it up.
All right.
Let's pick it up in the new year.
It's, you know, obviously been spectacularly popular.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know. Consistency is key, my friend.
Yeah.
I think we've been as consistent as is possible. I think it is reasonable to expect that we're not going to put out 52 episodes next year. But we might.
We might.
It's just, you know... Sometimes things get in the way, whether it's a session or, you know, you go away and record. I might go away and record.
You might.
We might do healthy human things, like go on holiday.
No, we're not. I'm not doing any of that shit. So I guess we'll see everybody in the new year. Should we cue the music?
Let's cue the music, yeah. Should I add some sleigh bells to it?
Yeah, maybe. I think we can do better on the music. I might do something on the music.
The music may change. It may evolve or it may be replaced. Let's find out.
Stay posted. Is that even
stay posted? Stay posted. At Manual Post.
Yeah. Very Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
And Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.